You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2.
Who wants to have some fun?
It's Mail It In Friday.
Right now, there are 600 Titleists that I got from the driving range in the trunk of my car.
Can we get on with it?
My name is George. I'm unemployed and I live with my parents.
These reports you handed in, it's almost as if you have no business training at all.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. It's Jays Yankees tonight. Richard Griffin from the Star will join us in about a half an hour. Get into a number of things with Richard, including detailing what the infield could look like for this team in two or three years. You know, will it be Rowdy Tellez at first? Will it be Gurriel Jr. at second? Bull Bichette at short? Vladdy at third? I think we can pretty much pencil that in. Danny Jansen behind the plate. We'll see what Griff has to say about that, because all of these kids are showing some positives here. You know, there are reasons for optimism. Now, when you start looking at the rotation and what it's going to look like in 2 years, that's a completely different conversation. But Richard Griffin will join us in about a half an hour. We haven't talked a lot of TFC recently because they've had such a disaster of a season. But I kind of want to play this audio because they've got the Galaxy in town tomorrow. They got seven games left. If you punch the numbers, they basically have to win every single game, and even then they're going to need some help. Gregory Vanderweel, first year over here, European guy.
Yeah.
Maybe some lost in translation type maneuvering here.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear how honest he was when he was asked about the chances of them doing it?
I do.
Yeah, realistically, it's not likely we're going to make it, to be honest. It's still difficult, of course. We're not going to give away the last games with the mentality, but we're going to fight here, give it our everything for the fans, for the people, for ourselves.
He's not wrong.
He's the greatest.
But I think I like the candid.
Well,
you know, the candid nature.
And it's kind
of
good for the spirit of the team, where it's like you always talk about. You got nothing to lose. You got nothing. Like, just go out and try to win every game.
But usually,
coaches talk about it. Players, like, we got to take a shift at a time, period at a time, half at a time. He basically just set it out there where it's,
we're done. There's no chance. Like, it's the World Junior coach. What was it, Swiss coach?
Yeah, it was Swiss against Canada in the quarters or whatever.
If we put those two together, it's almost the same speech.
Like, they're faster, they're bigger, they're stronger, they can shoot better, they can pass better, they can do everything better.
That's, I don't know if that's Gregory Vanderweel or the head coach of Switzerland.
That's what I'm saying.
I love how there's like a deep breath, and you can tell he's thinking, should I just be honest here or do I lie? You know, like, play the beginning there, Mullen, of Vanderweel, where there's a split second where he's like, I should probably lie and say we still have belief in this room.
He kind of hesitates. He's like, don't think it's happening.
Yeah, realistically, it's not likely we're going to make it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I like that, man.
Honestly, like, that's, you know where I'm going to hear that? Like, that speech? I'm going to hear that in Ottawa a lot this year when I'm calling games.
How many games do you have to call for Ottawa this year?
I mean,
not a privilege anymore.
I love calling games. So the thing is,
and you're very good at it, Jamie. And you're going to do your job just like,
I guess,
like Ray and Chris had to go to Humboldt, and they were so professional.
I'm fortunate to call it because I love calling games. I get to call a couple Leaf games, next week, preseason, stuff like that. So that's good. I got to call some Winnipeg games last year. And, it's going to be lean in Ottawa. But I'm going to hear that, I think, probably a good 36 times.
You think so?
They
can't say it early in the season.
No.
In October, you can't be like, realistically, we're probably not going to make it.
You want the people that, especially, that I've developed some relationships with guys on the team, and you're like, you want them to do well. Like, you have to think, if you're a veteran guy, I said this, I believe, to both of you off air yesterday, like, Craig Anderson's coming off a poor season. He usually bounces back with a big season. Unless he just stands on his head every night,
Vezina.
Vezina. It's going to be very lean.
Yeah.
And that weighs on a team mentally. And I've been on teams where I was on an expansion team. We knew we were going to be borderline last place going in. Well, we had a bunch of really good guys. We had some fun that year, but there was zero expectation. And I think that's where, unfortunately, the chips are going to have to fall early on for the Senators, is like maybe they catch lightning in a bottle a couple nights here and there, because you're like, teams are sleeping on him. You get a goalie that stands on their head. Mark Stone, Duchesne, Bobby Ryan has a resurgence. Like, they've got some players there, but it's going to be a lean year.
Yeah,
and I'm going to be calling them.
The players, they're not going to say it publicly, but what you're intimating here is that privately they know what's up.
Yes.
You know, they know it's not a good situation. The owner is what the owner is. The team on paper this year is what it is, and more than likely it's going to be very lean for 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the reality.
That's what's
it's not about. Yeah, it's not about me goofing on Ottawa or anything like that. The rink is in the middle of nowhere. The owner's a disaster. The team is awful, and they're going to be bad for a long time. I mean, that's just the reality. That's what you're dealing with if you're in Ottawa. So I'm seeing a lot online with Sens fans that are like, I'm out. I don't believe that either.
No.
Because if there's one thing that I noticed in Toronto, and we all did it, that's it. I'm never watching the Leafs again.
Yeah.
I'm out. No, you'll be back.
Well,
you'll be back if they turn it around. I mean, you're not going to come out over the next 3 or 4 years if they don't.
But
lifelong Leaf fans for years were like, this is it. I'm out. I'm never coming back. I hate this team.
And for fans, if you are in Ottawa, like, they experienced an Eastern Conference final. Like,
2 years ago. That doesn't mean anything now, though.
I'm just saying, like, you have had some recent success that you can go, okay, like, I wouldn't give up on a team.
Almost from the hop, they've been a successful organization.
But I wouldn't quit on a team right now because of the last 18 months.
Well, it's quitting on an owner, though. It's not the team. It's quitting on an owner.
You're right.
It's that if the owner is continuing to be the owner of this team, I'm not going to support him anymore.
Right. And
you know,
I did hear.
I think that's a big part of
Everyone has
the protest.
Everyone has their own take. I've talked to a few people from Ottawa. Everyone else has their own little take on how they will view the Senators this year. But yeah, I think the owner comes up a lot in those conversations. And it's his job to mend some fences. I mean, you may not have liked, I've said this before, you may not have liked the video, but it had the right message. Like, you can't lie. You can't boldface lie to people and say, yeah, we're doing this and doing something else. Like, rebuild was said 5 or 6 times in that video. Like,
that's what they're
lying.
Doing.
They're
no,
doing
for
a rebuild.
Sure. And I'm telling you again, because I experienced it here in Toronto, Ottawa Senator fans will return because you have a passion. You love the mm-hmm. team. You're connected to the team. Maybe you're from there, whatever it is.
Right.
But if in 2 or 3 years they draft the next Austin Matthews, and they've got the next Marner and Nylander, just using Toronto as an example, they're going to fill up the building again, and the passion's going to come back.
Well, and where our Eric Carlson went, he's going to be in a situation where it's Eric Carlson, Burns, where two quality defensemen are together. And I want to bring in one of my former teammates, Darcy Tucker. Tux, can you remember Ricky Lee at the defensive side of the bench, what his classic call was to send out two defensemen?
Tom, Brian, you're up. Aki, no, Tom, Brian. Aki, no, Tom, Brian.
Poor Aki.
Aki Berg just got stiffed,
just
huh?
The gay.
So you think
constantly
Tom, Brian was a popular call for Ricky Lee?
Alfredson's up, Tom Bryan.
Yeah, I think Rick Lee's got to get hired in San Jose. It's just Eric and Brent the whole night, isn't it? Don't you think that's going to be the case?
Can you just fire us an Eric and Brent?
Eric and Brent, you're up.
Ricky Lee.
That's what's going to happen in San Jose for the next, well, at least the next year, if they can sign him more, but never know.
Oh, that's great stuff, boys. I love the Ricky Lee stories. There's nothing better.
Well, O said no one does a better Rick Lee than Darcy Tucker.
Well, there was just sometimes Tux where he'd come in and be like, "Yeah, the power play video's in the back. If you want to go look at it, go ahead. If you don't, I don't care."
You guys want to watch some video, it's in the back.
Just committed to excellence.
And would the video just be the first period of the game?
No, you got to go in there and press play and watch it yourself.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes he throws the cassette and be like, you guys don't even need to watch this.
Oh, man.
But it's old school, but so respected, because these guys these days are just get crushed with video. At least we had the option, Tux.
Oh, absolutely. You know, sometimes it's paralysis by analysis with you guys today. So, yeah, we had the option to go watch if we wanted to, and we usually took Matt's lead. Matt, should we go watch it? No. Okay.
We're good. We're ready to play.
We're good.
That's the way
to do it.
Give it
to Cabby. Give it to Cabby and let him do the work.
Yeah, no kidding. That is hysterical.
Oh, Doug, how you been, buddy? I haven't talked to you in a while.
I'm doing good, bud. What are you up to? Are you doing Scotiabank stuff? Are you coaching your kids? Or do you miss training camp, the days of walking in, getting ready for the season, all the testing, or are you quite happy not doing that anymore?
I'm quite happy with the no Matt Nichol on the ice, six down and backs until your legs fall off your body. I'm totally fine with that. No, what's funny, though, is we're going to play in an alumni game down in Niagara Falls tomorrow night. So we're going to get our own little training camp in. My understanding is I got to play with Ricky Vives, so I better look for him all night, because if you don't give him the puck, he's mad at you.
Yeah, one-timers for sure for
Ricky.
Can't
even skate anymore, but he still wants the puck.
Right in the slot. Just give it to me when I'm standing still. I'm like, sure, Ricky, I got you.
We're just talking about training camp and guys showing up in these physical fitness testing, and I don't know if you saw Jean-Gabriel Pageau. He had surgery last night, out for 6 months in Ottawa. I mean, it gets to a point where these tests are ridiculous, aren't they, Tux?
Well, yeah, some of them just, it's tough on the body. I'll tell you what, like, I know that they train hard all summer, and it's almost like you don't need to do them anymore with the way the guys are training and how much they put into their summer to get into shape for training camp. And then you go there and you do all this physical testing, and it could become a problematic thing with injuries. And I don't know if that's something that happened at training camp for him, but I know a couple times over the course of my career, not that I was in the best shape when I got there, but you tweak something here or there and miss a couple days of training camp because of it.
Tux, what do you make of a letter? I know you were a leader. I think you wore an A here in Toronto. And there was Mats, there was Gary Roberts, there was not Assface, Caber. does it mean anything, or is it just you go in there and do your thing and everybody knows who leads the group and you just go about it that way? Is it, are people making too much of it or what?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes there's a little bit too much made out of it. It's my understanding, obviously, that they got three assistant captains for the season this year. At some point over the course of your career, you're going to play for a young captain, you're going to play for an old captain. And I was fortunate enough to play for some good captains in Matt Sundin and Joe Sakic. So when you have guys of that ilk wearing the C, it's pretty amazing. But then you look at the guys that never wore letters that you played with over the course of your career, they were just as good a leader. A guy like Joe Nieuwendyk, who was here in Toronto, that didn't wear an A, was an amazing leader, and obviously could have been a captain on many teams, won three Stanley Cups. So it doesn't matter sometimes who's wearing the letter on the jersey. It just matters the fact that you have leadership in your locker room, and the Leafs have great leadership. You got good young leadership, and you got good veteran leadership now.
Well, enjoy it down there in Niagara Falls, and make sure Rick gets his hat trick, or let us know what goes south if he doesn't. And we always appreciate you doing this for us. We'll do it again down the road.
Tom Bryan,
you're up.
Thanks, Darcy. Appreciate it, man.
Cheers, boys.
There's Darcy Tucker, a.k.a. Ricky Lee. Tom Bryan. I love
you're
the Aki. Aki, yeah. No.
Aki, no, thanks. Tom Bryan.
I can appreciate that as a plug defenseman where it's like, okay, I think the fourth line's coming out. We might try to sneak
you're
in
up.
A
nope.
shift.
Tom Bryan, you're up.
All you have to do is watch to see who's out on the other side and then just match.
Exactly. Well, that's all it is, right?
Yeah.
That's the reality of working a bench where coaches, that's when you get in trouble, right? If you're in charge of the defense and somehow you screwed up and you got that third pairing out and you didn't realize McDavid was coming over the ice, that coach is going to chop you up. That's why guys get end up playing 30 minutes a night, because they're terrified to not have them on the ice.
And the players know. If you're a third-line defenseman and you see 97 or 34.
You're just looking at the bench of the
like,
coach.
Where like,
get me
you
off.
You don't want to be caught out there, too, because you know you're chasing that guy around.
Mm-hmm. It's true, man. I know.
Like, I don't know how many times, I mean, as a backup, I sat with the D a lot, and the defensive coaches are... You have your matchups, and you like
Paul Maurice took over as the coach, and he's like, Jeff, you're going to be playing with Nelson Emerson and Brendan Shanahan going to Philadelphia, and you're regarded as the top line for the Whalers. Guess who comes over the boards? Just take a guess.
Scott Stevens.
No, Philadelphia.
Oh, Lindros.
Big E.
Yeah.
Legion of Doom. All of them, one after another, come over the boards. I'm looking at them. I'm thinking.
That's my matchup.
For the whole night, and I'm 19 years old, I'm 175 pounds, they were literally grabbing me and throwing me in the corner. Like, get.
Yeah, and Big E's 250.
Yeah.
That's got to be the most terrifying matchup.
To know you have no chance
is
like, difficult.
Especially physically overpowering.
Like,
right?
Later like, in your career, you're like, okay, I got this, I can do this. You want to, you know,
Dougie
Gilmore was 170 pounds, and he could. You just learn to navigate, but when you're,
yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like, if you were to ask a shutdown guy, right? Pooley was a shutdown, really quality.
Well, he played against him too.
That's what I'm saying, though. If you were to ask him, who would you fear playing more that night? Wayne Gretzky in the mid '80s or Lindros in the mid '90s? Because Gretzky will tee up for 7 points, but Lindros might kill you.
Yeah, like skate right over you.
He might actually destroy you.
Yeah.
Like,
that's a great question. It's like, what? Pick your poison. What do you want?
Yeah.
This guy will kill you, or the other guy will light you up for -5.
I felt...
They both offer their different...
Yeah, because Gretzky Lemieux dismantle you and embarrass you, where Lindros will do that, but he'll also destroy you physically.
Right.
There was about a 2-year period where he was, with those guys in the league, Lemieux and Gretzky, as dominant as I've ever seen. And we got to play them a lot. Like Lindros and Philly and that Legion of Doom. Like, that's the thing. Renberg was a really good player. Like, obviously, certainly overshadowed. And
John LeClair.
Yeah, Marmaduke
goals.
There. LeClair, he had that weird stick. I don't know if you've ever seen his upshoot on his stick.
Like under the bar. Sandwich. Under the bar all night.
Man,
that's all it was.
A good player.
Picked up garbage and under the bar.
And half the battle for those guys was they would just beat the hell out of you. They'd go in the corner. Defenseman on the floor, centerman on the floor, and then it was like they had no option but to be good.
Yeah.
Because they would crush you.
That's what I'm saying about Lindros. Like, he was so terrifying. Because if you whacked him, he'd turn around and look at you like, all right.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to, we'll drop the gloves and I'll beat the hell out of you. And you're like, okay.
But that the league did have had some scary characters.
Eric Lindros was a scary human being. My first face-off against him, he looked at Shanny and said, tell the guy in your fourth line, if he touches me again, I'm going to kill him. And you better do it because I'm going to do it. And I was like, okay. Like, they had, like, a mutual respect. And I was just a young kid. And it was just like, what is going on here?
Yeah, there was...
It was scary stuff. Like, it's not it's not even close.
The league, I'm not
Nobody
in it,
says stuff like that.
I'm in between the benches a lot, so I do hear the banter. There's some funny comments still, but
There's not... There's not,
but the league has never been... Again, I'm not in
softer.
It, and I'm not it easier physically that way. Not because
it's
these
like
guys,
you got a big nose, you're a fat ass, you're a this, I'm going to kill you.
But I'm saying, like, there are guys, like, now with the slashing, it's a penalty. Like, it's every slashing penalty is called now, which that's the rules. But back then, playing with Pronger and McInnes, they took 5 penalties every shift.
Right.
Every defenseman did.
Well, and that was a big equalizer, too, back in the day. Like, if you went up against Lindros, you can't hit him, but I'm going to hack him.
Yeah, chop him on the hand. Chop him.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's the league is, if you want to be, you can go through a game and almost not get hit nowadays, where I don't believe that was the case back then. It just seemed different. Now, it's a different brand of hockey. I don't want to sound like an old guy comparing old to new. It's just a different brand of hockey. And I thought Aginla, when we had him on our first show, really nailed it. He said the top players are always the top players. It's just your depth players, your third and fourth line, were different types of players. Now, the fourth line can skate. The fourth line can play.
Look at the Leafs. It's day one of camp. We don't know how this is going to all play out.
Right.
But technically, the fourth line, because people believe Paul Lindholm is going to be the fourth line center, was Andreas Janssen on the left and Kapanen on the right.
Yeah.
Maybe the two best skaters on the team are real close to it. Two small Europeans that can fly will never throw a check or a big hit, will never fight in their careers.
Right.
Where the Leafs went to the playoffs 5 years ago and Fraser McLaren and Colton Orr were on that.
Yeah, it's just, and the league has changed that dramatically.
In 5 years.
Quite quickly, too. I don't think people are complaining about it,
no,
but
I'm
it's
not
just a
that
different brand of hockey.
It's just embracing a reality. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
5 years ago, Fraser McLaren and Colton Orr were in that position. Now it's Andreas Janssen and Kasperi Kapanen.
And if you look at it throughout the league, there is nobody on the fourth line that really mirrors those type of players right now. Because Tom Wilson, regardless of what people think of him, he's a really good player.
Yeah, awesome he can play. Yeah. Ryan Reeves can skate and play.
Ryan Reeves doesn't embarrass himself out there.
Yeah, exactly. Matt Martin can play.
Yes.
You know, they're
regardless
not
of what people think of him.
Chip in a ton of goals
it
or
just,
points, but
you're right. And even if you have guys who play that style, there's not five of them on every team. There may be one. Maybe. The Leafs don't have one. Technically.
Well, and that is...
Kadri plays a chippy style, but he's not dropping the gloves and fighting a monster. He'll defend his teammates, but he's not going to be doing it. There's nobody and on
that
roster.
They don't have a policeman, quote-unquote.
But you can have team toughness, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that they go out and find one. I mean, this is the way that they're going to build their team, and I'm all for it. But they don't have... Not even Matt Martin as a guy who you could put into the lineup if need be.
Right.
Or Pollock was always a guy who looked mean and played mean and scrums in front of the net. That's just not going to be the way the Leafs are going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Griffin will join us on the Jays and what their infield could look like in 2 or 3 years, maybe as early as next year. Jays-Yankees tonight as well will start teeing up the playoffs. So the Yankees falling behind the big three in the American League of Houston, Cleveland, and Boston. Peter DeBoer, head coach of the Sharks, just after 6, and back into the NFL at 6:30. The Overdrive hotline will be open as of this evening. We're going to unveil the phone number at some point this afternoon, and we'll post it on Twitter, on Instagram. And if you've got hot takes, if you've got good stories, your daily routine, you want to pick up on something that we've been talking about on the show.
I'm going to fire that up, the message, the recording, right before 6 o'clock, and it's go time.
All right. So we'll open up the phone lines and we'll filter through some messages and you can hopefully be a part of the show. We're going to play some calls next week and we'll see what people have to say. All right?
Yes.
Love
basically
it.
Sliding into the DMs of Overdrive.
I love it.
Slide into the DMs. All right? So we're really looking forward to that. Richard Griffin of the Star will join us here in a moment. Jays, Yankees. And the Yankees have 90 wins. 90 wins with, 16 games left to play? And they're 10.5 back of the Red Sox.
There's been a drop the last 2 months.
There has. And Aaron Judge getting injured, although they're still putting up runs. But, you know, they're 90-56. Plus 148 is their run differential, and people are like, it doesn't feel right here with the Yankees. I think it's just that's how good Boston's been. Cleveland's got that kind of vibe to them. They were in the World Series a couple of years ago, and Houston won the World Series last year. So it kind of feels like, Houston has a plus 242 run differential.
Well, didn't Boston have that vibe last year where they had a good season? They went into Houston and got their asses whooped.
They flamed out a lot in the playoffs the past few years, right? Even when the Jays were there, Boston was getting in and they were flaming out in the first round. Like the Tribe swept them that first year, or second year, I think it was, in 2016.
But that's, then last year, Houston gave it to them, I think.
But that's the scary part. You have an amazing season and...
ends in 5 days.
Yeah. Like, done.
Well, how about the wild card game?
That's
the Yankees could win 100 games and be out in an afternoon.
It is actually, it is kind of sick.
It is sick. And because they've kind of...
But that's like the playoff format in the NHL. I mean, you know, we're going to have this talk all year. If the Leafs don't end up first in the East, you know, now they're going to be looking at potentially playing a real strong team in that first round, and another team will slide. That's if everything,
if everything lays out the way it's supposed to.
Exactly, the way we're thinking.
No question, but at least it's a 7-game series.
Correct.
You know, like, Oakland's now at 89 wins themselves. They still technically could catch Houston. It doesn't seem likely because Houston is now on fire. Like, they had their dip in August, and now Houston's like, all right, we're ready. let's get rocking here. And it seems like they're never going to lose. But Oakland's only a game back of the Yankees for home field in that wild card game.
Right.
The Yankees could end up with 98 wins and have a road wild card game. Like, that's just how crazy the American League has been. And it's because they're beating up on all these donkey teams, and the Blue Jays are one of those teams. Here's our buddy Richard Griffin of the Toronto Star. Any sympathy for the Yankees if they end up with high 90s, even 100 wins, but start on the road for a wild card game?
Well, I think the advantage they have is they've got three against the Jays this weekend, so that'll give them a step up on the A's going down the stretch. So, no, I don't feel sorry for them.
Yeah, I guess it is impossible to feel sorry for them, and you're right. Boston just swept the Jays, and the Jays have, what, 15, 16 games left. Do you expect them to get to 70 wins, or do you think they're just going to mail it in here and that's it?
Yeah, no, it's not just mail it in Friday. It's mail it in 7 days a week right now.
Right.
And I think that 69, 68 wins is reasonable. I mean, they're putting all their young players out on the field on purpose, and those young players are trying their best. But especially with the pitching staff, especially with the starting pitchers, very difficult, and they have a tremendously tough schedule down the stretch with the Yankees, Astros, Tampa, who kills them all the time. And the only soft spot is the Orioles, and other than that, they're all winning teams.
With Richard Griffin of the Toronto Star.
Shouldn't a motivation for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, Brian, is the
other. Well, the Rays are having a great run, right. But
yeah,
they're not.
But shouldn't that be a motivation for Jays fans? You talk about teams with star power. The Oakland Athletics and the Tampa Bay Rays, I mean, there's star power lost, and they still find a way to put a team on the field that competes. Shouldn't the Jays fans be thinking, okay, there's some star power gone, but shouldn't we be able to somehow in the next couple of years put a team together?
Absolutely. I mean, there's three teams in the bottom 10 of team payrolls in Major League Baseball, Milwaukee and Oakland, and they're in it. They're going to the playoffs with teams in the bottom 10 of payroll. And I look back at Tampa Bay, and they had a run of three straight seasons where they didn't have a starting pitcher who was over 30 years old, who had reached 30 yet. They had three straight seasons. One of those, they went 97 and 65 and went to the World Series. So that's what Jays fans should be turning their attention to. I mean, they've been paying attention for years to the Red Sox and the Yankees, and now that's the wrong way for them to be looking. They should be looking at the teams that have won on a budget and won with younger players and say, hey, everyone's touting this farm system. Why can't we do that? And you're absolutely right. That's the way that they need to look. And I'm not saying it's going to happen in 2019, I see 2020, and we've talked about this before, 2020 is a year where they look around and say, what do we need to fill in the gaps? And then 2021, just from sitting next to Mark Shapiro, who a lot of times is hard to believe when he's talking about how this team's going to come back. But in this case, he was identifying and pinpointing 2021 with exactly the scenario that we've talked about on this show.
Well, when you look at the pieces they may have in place already, the infield, you can start to envision how it's going to look in 2 or 3 years. Rowdy Tellez at first, you got Gurriel Jr. at second, Bichette at short, Vladdy at third, Jansen behind the plate. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, I might even flip Gurriel and Bichette second and short. Gurriel with the short throws from second has had difficulty. And people have always said that Bichette is destined to be somewhere else other than shortstop. So other than that, the names I agree with. Tellez could even be a valuable piece next season. And this is something. They're going to get under $100 million from 161, which is crazy when you think about it, going into next season. And they can do that just by giving somebody else Russ Martin to catch. There's a lot of teams that could use his experience and the fact that he's been to so many playoffs in so many years. And they eat everything except, say, $5 million. Or they make the other team only pay $5 million. They eat the rest. I mean, it's a savings on a guy that doesn't fit in to what they're trying to do moving forward. And they could get rid of Kendrys Morales in the same way, paying most of the payroll. And that would allow them to keep Rowdy Tellez for next season as well, and Justin Smoke. So, you know, there's creative ways, and I do believe they're going to be under $100 million next year, looking to compare themselves with the A's.
Always difficult to get a read on what we're seeing in September when a team is 35.5 games out of the race. But Rowdy Tellez is a guy who made his mark in spring training a couple of years ago, and Jays fans were waiting for him to get here. And now he's a doubles machine. He's putting up numbers we haven't seen since the early 1900s. Is he the real deal? Are you buying it in terms of Rowdy Tellez?
I'm not buying it yet. I mean, every time he faces a left-handed pitcher, he swings a bat like Rowdy Roddy Piper. And, you know, until he gets that balance of being able to handle left-handed pitchers, I don't think that he's the guy to handle first base. But like I said, if he's in the major leagues as a platoon DH and an occasional first baseman in 2019, I think he's got a chance to develop. But I wouldn't count on him out of the gate in 2019, even if you are planning on fielding a younger team.
Griff, we talked about Tampa. We talked about Oakland. If you go to Houston, where they literally told their fans, we are going to be garbage for 3 years. I mean, what could you take away from that game plan? And can the Jays do it where, you know, they won the World Series last year. They're one of the favorites to win this year. Is it possible that they can say, we have enough coming in the future where we could be that team? Like, do you be that bad, or do you go the Oakland-Tampa route where it's like, maybe we can put something together in a couple of years, or it's just we're going to be really bad and try to be what Houston is?
Well, I think what Houston did and what Detroit did in the first decade of this century are a different situation than the Jays, because the Jays haven't dropped to those depths. And I don't think
they're far off, Griff, are they?
Yeah, they're tanking right now because they're playing those younger players. I think if they really tried, they could even get up to 72 wins.
But what's the sense of that?
Well, that's exactly right. What's the sense of that? But they haven't sunk as low as the Astros and the Tigers. And even when the Tampa Bay Rays went to the World Series, it was their first season finishing above 500. And they caught lightning in a bottle. They had a bunch of good young players, especially pitchers. But I don't see the comparison with the Astros and the Blue Jays, because the Astros, you know, got all those draft picks, and you could see them year after year, the Carlos Correas and those guys that were coming up, Springer. And you could see that happening, and these guys were special players. And you look at the Jays, and they've been drafting 12th to 25th. They haven't had that advantage, so they're going to have to do it in a different way with a total development of players and pitchers. And, you know, it's not going to be as dramatic if they ever do get back to the postseason in the next decade.
Thank you, Griff. Always appreciate it.
Okay, guys, anytime.
Richard Griffin of the Star joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Hurry into Maple Toyota during the Toyota 2018 Clear Out event, where you can get rates from 0%. Visit MapleToyota.com.
I would lean towards, like, scorching the earth, Houston approach, as opposed to, you know, like, there's no Billy Bean here. Ross Atkins is not Billy Bean. You're not going to...
No, but here's the problem with that. Vladdy's going to be on your team next year. So yeah, you're already in protecting him mode. And how awful of an atmosphere do you want that kid to be hanging around?
Are they going
to
bring in a Crash Davis? You think the Jays are going to be good next year?
No, they're not going to be good next year. Okay, so they might do it by osmosis. Yeah, you're right. But I'm like, Houston, they were winning games like in the 50s and stuff. Like, they were Baltimore. You know, right. Like, Baltimore, how many wins does Baltimore have right now? Baltimore has 42 wins. They're going to finish with less than 50 wins. Do you know how pathetic that is? The Jays are 23 games up on
Kansas
Baltimore.
Kansas City's not far behind.
Yeah. I understand that. But
so did the Jays bring in a Crash Davis?
Yeah.
That type, like, they surround him with, like, good people, show him how to be a pro?
It depends on what the price is. You know, you got to have – I think you're going to have a lot of kids.
Yeah.
They're going to have to sign a couple of pitchers, if not multiple arms, for the rotation and the bullpen, and I have no idea what you can expect out of that. But you're going to get, you know, Vladdy's going to come up and play. Gurriel Jr. is going to play. Tellez will stick around, I would think. Smoke they'll keep around. You're going to have Hernandez in left. Grichuk in right. These are young guys, but they're already here. Pilar probably sticks around. You know, like, that's – it's going to be a similar-looking team to what we see right now, and it's not good enough, but you got to try to gain some experience and – they're going to lose a lot of games next year. I just don't know if they're going to end up with, you know, sub 50 wins. They probably end up with 65, high 60s, and it's going to be ugly. It's not going to be fun. But you got to put faith in Shapiro and Atkins that they can find a way to hit the right spots and turn this thing around as quickly as possible.
Yeah. That's their job.
That's what they're getting paid to do. They're absolutely on the clock. Peter DeBoer of the San Jose Sharks, their head coach, will join us just after 6. And some disappointing news out of Buffalo. Very disappointing. We'll tell you about that next. All right, so the Josh Allen era begins this weekend down at New Era Field in Buffalo, and they're playing host to the Chargers, and both teams need a win. L.A.'s got to be chomping at the bit because they looked ugly at home against Kansas City in week one. But you look at the Bills, like the Ravens beat them by 44 points, and then they got smoked last night by the Bengals. Like, what does that mean for the Bills? You know? Like, it just keeps getting worse if you're in Buffalo.
You think it was just, but if the Bills look bad on paper, but do you think it was an off night and bad?
Every week is a different team. Every week changes.
We've talked about this 100 times. When you're a bad team, you play bad, you get crushed, and then you look at the schedule, and you look at that team, and you're thinking, there's no way we can beat that team.
I would think the Bills say that about everybody right now.
And when you're playing good, you circle the team and say, "Ah, that's a pretty good team, but you know what? We can get them right now." But when you're bad, you're bad.
So outside of going to the game to see Josh Allen in his first start, which is significant. It's historic. If this guy morphs into what they believe he can morph into,
right.
Hopefully he turns into the next Jim Kelly, or at least a stable quarterback for a decade.
Right.
Outside of that, if you're a diehard Bills fan, if you're a member of Bills Mafia, what are you looking forward to when you go to the game?
Nothing. Breaking a table.
Thank you.
Getting plastered.
Breaking tables. Well, the Erie County Sheriff's Department has implemented a few rules for Bills tailgating party.
Oh, no.
And the
no more.
Table slamming will not be permitted, and those who violate the rule will be ejected and could face criminal charges.
Is that stem from, like, an injury or something? Like, did somebody, like, it wouldn't surprise me if somebody severely injured themselves.
Well, some of them, they light on fire and idiots jump through it. So,
yeah, that's, well, it may be people jumping off of, like, Winnebagoes onto tables and, like, it's not cool. Like,
they're getting ahead of somebody ending up and breaking their back or wheelchair or something awful like that.
I think they're being proactive here. I think they're probably doing the right thing. But it's a free country. This is where we're like, government, don't get involved. Let me do my thing if I want to jump through a table.
Well, you know they're still going to do it. Bills Mafia is going to do it.
Oh, I know they will. And here's, you know what my guess would be? It's probably the Bills ownership who's like, we don't want this on our property.
Right, because that is a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Exactly. Some idiot's going to jump through a table and miss it and hit himself in the head on some, you know, on a pothole.
Kill himself. Yeah, you never know.
And it's going to be our fault somehow, and they're going to sue us. And that's also very American, the idea that you do something stupid, but you got to sue somebody else. It's got to be somebody else's fault. It can't be mine.
Of course. Right.
So, I mean, that's the one thing. If you're Bills Mafia, you know your team is abysmal.
Right.
You at least you get to tailgate and watch idiots jump through tables, and apparently that's RIP. That is no longer going to be allowed.
Wow.
Imagine having to police that. Imagine you're a cop, you're sober, it's a Sunday morning, you're out there, and you're like, oh.
They're going to have to go a lot on videos, because people are going to be posting it, and they're going to have to dig through it and say, who is this?
Do you think they're going to use resources to do that?
What do you think they're going to do, Brian? They're going to have 5,000 cops in the parking lot? And
no, you're right. It'll be, if it goes viral on Deadspin or something, what
they're doing
do is
it.
Track
like they're going to continue to do it. They love that. They love nothing more than jumping off the Winnebago onto the white plastic table and smashing it in half.
Gronk admitted that he had done it before. Like, Gronkowski's from Buffalo.
Right.
And he said he had never done a tailgating at a Bills game, but he had done it at family events.
That is kind of funny.
Gronk shows up at his great aunt's 95th birthday, and he
body
launches himself through a table.
Him and Nana. He throws his grandmother through it, too.
Nana Gronkowski.
Pass the corn, Gronk goes through the table.
So I guess it's going to be the end of that era. So you know this is going to be big news in Buffalo because...
Well, if they're not talking about the team, they're going to... There will be... Because somebody will get cited or fined or because of a video or because of that. And
well, they're going to say our team is the worst in the league and now you're taking away our fun.
Right. Leave us alone. Give us something.
Yeah.
What are we going to do here? What, actually watch the game? Watch these
But Buffalo's not
going to play?
They're not going to go 0-16, are they?
No, they're not.
Okay, so
they'll
then,
win a game.
They're going to win a couple games. It's when
really?
You guys got to figure out. Well, you don't have to figure out when you're in your survivor pool, but.
Pull up your schedule and you tell me what game they're going to win.
Okay. Dude,
like
twice in NFL
history. You
watched
history. Them against the Ravens, who just got beat against Cincinnati.
I know. It's 1 week.
Is it 0% chance that they win this week?
Yes.
I wouldn't say 0%.
Zero.
It's Philip Rivers who I like. He's a really good quarterback, but you know the Chargers.
Oh, what? So Joe Flacco's a world beater?
No.
He whooped their ass 43-3.
What I'm saying is the Chargers are notorious.
They will crush them in Buffalo.
I think the Chargers win big. I'm not saying I would bet on the Bills.
Don't say they have a chance. Don't say that.
He said, is it 0%?
It's zero.
No, it's not 0%.
Okay, 100?
Well, it's not one extreme or the other.
Yeah,
he asked me. What did you say?
I said, so it's the lock of the century, 0% that they win.
Exactly.
I'll give you 20-1 odds on $100 on that game.
You're going to give me 20-1?
Yes.
What, the Bills win outright?
No, obviously not.
What are you talking about?
This week, the Chargers at Buffalo.
Yes. So you're saying if I take the Bills to win outright,
yep.
I get them at 20-1?
Yep.
I almost have to take that.
That memory bins.
You don't want me lurking in the bridge looking for you. You realize I will call up some friends that I have in the bridge, and we will find you.
$100, 20-1.
100's a little rich. What about 20?
I don't want to bet on the Bills.
But I'm saying you get $2,000 if they win.
That's what I'm saying.
If he loses, he doesn't want to throw $20 out the window.
It's lighting $100.
It's 100.
I'm downgrading it to 20. Let's keep it friendly here, Jim.
No, $100, right. 20-1 odds.
We'll talk in the break.
No, because you have no balls. 27 under, no balls.
I'm the one betting on a team that
you're
I think is a practical
27 under
joke.
At the no balls open.
20-1. All right, fine. I'll do it.
Okay, we're on.
Let's do it. Come on, Bills. I know Josh Allen can do it this weekend. Joey Bosa's not playing. The Chargers suck. Forget them. The Bills get their win.
You better bring the money on Monday.
Beansy, you realize what 20-1 is going to do? I will be lurking around the bridge.
Oh, take that memory, Beansy.
You better have got a tracksuit.
Oh, yeah. Don't make me go.
The best thing is I got to watch the game now.
Yes. Oh, we both do. I might go to the game. Don't make me go Richie Aprile on you, Beansy.
You got a bad memory, Beansy.
I love that. All right. I don't have to go through the schedule anymore. I got them winning this weekend.
What is their schedule, by the way?
Oh, it's so ugly.
They're not winning this weekend.
They're Chargers at home. Then they're at the Vikings and then at the Packers.
When oh, my God. Patriots. There's
there's two losses.
Crush, crush, crush.
Yeah. At home to Tennessee.
Crush.
When did they got the Patriots?
Week 8. They're at home. That's ugly.
Well, Tommy boy will be rolling in there. Although it could
be snow. Is
that a
1 o'clock game?
No, it's actually a primetime game. That's a Monday nighter. Monday nighter, Bills Mafia, and you can't break tables? What are they going to do all day? They have all day to tailgate, and they can't go through tables.
That will be an epic ass-whooping.
Against the Packers? And that's a Monday night?
No. That's the Patriots.
England. Oh, Patriots.
New England at home Monday night.
Wow.
All right. Go Bills. All right. We got Peter DeBoer. The Sharks coming up just after 6. We're gonna
I'm $100 richer, and I love it.
I know. I feel it's such a dumb bet.
You just handed me $100.
I thought it was 20.
No, it started at a hunch.
It's a all hunch, right. But if I lose...
All right.
$2,000.
Bob Papa's coming up at 6:30. We'll see what he has to say about the Bills-Chargers game. And the hotline will be opening very soon. We're going to unveil the number and do all that good stuff. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.